Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. This hour, we're going to be joined by Griff Jenkins and Jillian Michaels. One is in really good shape. You make the call. And number two, we're going to be taking your calls, 1-866-408-7669. So there's a lot happening today. We know the President of the United States just gave a two-hour interview to the New York Times, of all people. At one point, the media members of the media have to be saying to themselves, we're never going to have this access again. I mean, we're hearing about President Trump taking calls at 4:30 in the morning from the Washington Post. And then we're hearing about Jake Tapper and Kristen Welker of Meet the Press being able to contact the president. Do you understand for 4 years we never heard from the president? Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
As you've seen today, two more ships were seized. We are in the midst right now and, in fact, about to execute on a deal to take all the oil. They have oil that is stuck in Venezuela. They can't move it because of our quarantine and because it's sanctioned. We are going to take between 30 and 50 million barrels of oil.
Trump's boldness is happening in the best way to lead the world to peace and prosperity. Just look at his recent actions. Massive military muscle on display as they ignore a Russian warning and take a tanker, as they claim as theirs. The Russians were wrong about that. Sign on to sanctions for Russia and their actions in Ukraine. Bipartisan sanctions will be taking place next week, and forging ahead on Greenland. A hawkish Iran has been now on the run and on the lam. They're trying to go after us, and our president is not backing down. This is quite a list.
Number two.
The president's about to make some really big announcements, and what we're going to do is we want to preserve the wealth that a lot of people have accrued in their homes while also making it possible for young people to afford their first home.
Trump team makes some major moves on housing and the economy. The market didn't like it, but I do.
Number one.
A motorist who federal officials said tried to run down an immigration agent in Minneapolis is dead tonight. He was shot by the ICE agent. The FBI and state law enforcement are investigating. Homeland Security Director Kristi Noem calls it an act of domestic terrorism and says the driver tried to kill the agent. The mayor of Minneapolis says that is, quote, garbage. Minnesota's governor says the tragedy was, quote, totally predictable and totally avoidable.
So Minneapolis continues to be a national embarrassment of a city thanks to its leadership. First, we have more facts about the massive fraud under Governor Walz's watch. And now, the harassing of ICE agents day after day, week after week, has resulted in the death of a 37-year-old woman. And they're blaming ICE. With us right now is Griff, spends a lot of time with law enforcement, Border Patrol, who go into these cities in sanctuary situations. And we know, Griff, this woman, 37 years old, we don't really know much about her, except for, according to ICE, she was leading a lot of the harassment. Her car, her SUV pilot was one blocking the road. You could see in this video that the officer was telling her to roll down your window and pull over. Instead, she rolled it up and went forward at another cop who opened fire through the windshield. So we're going to debate this back and forth, but it's amazing how many officials have already made their conclusions.
And that's an important point, Brian, because literally we should be dealing in facts, not F-bombs, as the mayor, Jacob Frey, likes to do, because an investigation is underway, and yet he is jumping right out in front of that, saying that this is BS, that the officer was acting in self-defense. Let's back up for the big context and just say, first of all, ICE has the right to be there carrying out federal immigration law enforcement in a sanctuary jurisdiction, yeah, which doesn't cooperate with feds. That's why they're there. Now, as for this woman, you cannot. It is against the law to impede or obstruct a federal immigration law enforcement investigation or operation. She's got her car as a, quote, legal observer, which she shouldn't be in the middle of it, but she is blocking the ICE vehicle. That's what leads to the second part, which is the ICE officers trying to get her out of the car to arrest her, to which she does not comply. She's now done what appears on this video, two things wrong in impeding and instructing an investigation. And then the third thing, the key one, she speeds off rather than stop and get out of the car, and obviously strikes or directly threatens the officer. He fires shots. And I think, you know, Jonathan Turley, that was on with us a little bit earlier, talked about, while we have an investigation based on the video we see now, he thinks that it does seem to add up to the officer's self-defense claims. I think we may have a little bit of Turley. Let's play that.
courts have been very clear. They don't second guess the split second decisions. They look at the totality as to whether this was a reasonable act by this officer. What you have here is a vehicle that is legally treated as a weapon. And these officers are trained in both federal and state to treat a car as a weapon if it is speeding towards them. You have an individual who did not comply with the orders to get out of the car and in fact sped up towards the agent. So for all of that, we have to look at the remaining evidence. There's still video I'd like to see. An investigation has to be completed. But as it stands now, this is a stronger and stronger case supporting the officer.
So just to go back on that, so this is a case that's still up in the air. But listen to Mayor Jacob Frey. Remember how he screwed up the George Floyd riots? Remember him taking a knee and crying? You remember him allowing the police station to be taken over? Cut 7.
And I have a message for ICE. To ICE, get the f*** out of Minneapolis. We do not want you here. Your stated reason for being in this city is to create some kind of safety, and you are doing exactly the opposite. People are being hurt. Families are being ripped apart.
What a clown this guy is. It's his sanctuary policies that made it for the ICE officials have to come in and round up the criminals and illegals in his city, which he is perfectly fine with giving them social services and also with the corruption that was right under his nose. This is just the anti-leadership. Can you imagine being a coach in a game? And every time a call doesn't go your way, every time a game doesn't go the way you want it, losing your mind. You'd have the job for a week. Instead, this guy keeps his job, Griff, and gets it and wins elections.
And here's a little secret, Mayor Frey. ICE would be happy to leave your city if you would cooperate with federal immigration law enforcement ICE detainers, which simply would peacefully transfer those violent illegal criminal aliens over to federal custody. They choose not to. That's why ICE is there. But to your point, look, at the end of the day, this is a tinderbox of a situation even before this shooting. Why? Because for months you have had people like Jacob Frey, like Governor Walz, with this absolutely over-the-top rhetoric calling ICE Gestapo and Nazis and making them the target, putting targets on their back. So much so that, by the way, look at the data. There have been 99 vehicle assaults this year on ICE officials, and that is more than double what it was for the entirety of last year.
I don't even know one person in my life, tangentially, even acquaintances, that when asked to pull over by a cop, wouldn't pull over. When asked to roll down your window, wouldn't roll down your window. Who would actually go forward into a cop or look to pull away, unless, of course, they're drunk or on drugs, which thankfully I don't have many of them. Do you? Most people out there don't know anyone that would do that. So listen to Jacob Frey, who gets booked, of course, on CNN, who always goes anti-officer, as MSNBC, who cares, but you just expect it. So you think he should be somewhat contrite. Say, oh, I lost my temper. Instead, this, cut 8.
I'm so sorry if I offended their Disney princess ears, but here's the thing. If we're talking about what's inflammatory, on the one hand, you got someone who dropped an F-bomb, and on the other hand, you got someone who killed somebody else. F-bomb, killing somebody. I think the more inflammatory action is killing somebody. And so, once again...
So, we're enough of him. The analogy is not even correct. You're talking about the response to a high-stress incident that resulted in the death of somebody. The response. And you could go back to the shootings in Dallas of ICE officers, how they've been targeted elsewhere and doxxed, and their families doxxed throughout the country. Why? Because of people like Pritzker, people like Gavin Newsom, like the idiot mayor in Chicago, and the clown of a character in Jacob Frey in Minneapolis. And now Mayor Mamdani in New York City, who quickly put out on Twitter, murderer.
And to your point, Brian, it is going to be the totality of circumstances that go into determining whether or not that officer was justified in using deadly force. And ultimately, what Jonathan Turley was also telling us this morning was that when you look at what's available in video and you consider the totality of circumstances, blocking, not getting out, then speeding towards an officer, it is likely that under the precedent of the 1985 Supreme Court case, Tennessee versus Gardner, that this officer was justified. Now, what did that case do? That case basically is the precedent for which we changed the way you deal with fleeing suspects. That case said that the officer cannot simply fire and use deadly force on someone that is trying to evade a situation just based on that. However, that led all of our police departments and law enforcement agencies across the country to have a much more strict, rigid standard for the use of deadly force. And if indeed there is the immediacy of a deadly threat, then they are justified under that. So they really clarified that situation. And the fact that Paul Mora told us that the officer shot through the windshield, not in the side window, that suggests the car was directly at
the mayor. There it came out. The mayor, Mamdani, came out and said, an ICE agent murdered a woman in Minneapolis. Eric Swalwell, this is murder. Ilhan Omar, this is not law enforcement. It is state violence. It is simply indefensible, and ICE must be held accountable. That must include a full comprehensive investigation. Does anyone listen to her at all for anything? She should be defending how she got a visa, and I don't think she's able to do that. The big story yesterday was fraud. Fraud that's been exposed and happening over the course of maybe beyond before Waltz, but certainly through Waltz's tenure, which has lasted 8 years. Here's a listen of what you might have missed yesterday because you have a job or some of the coverage got smothered by the shooting. Cut 19.
The Tim Walz administration has utterly failed to protect Minnesota taxpayers and vulnerable citizens, ignoring years of credible reports and retaliating against those who spoke up, often by claiming they were racist or Islamophobic. Tim Walz and the Democrats have repeatedly protected their political base at the expense of all Minnesotans.
When do you think Governor Walz knew about this fraud?
From the very beginning.
Do you have any doubt that Governor Tim Walz knew about this fraud as it was occurring?
He absolutely knew that it was occurring.
Yeah, he obviously knew about it and either decided to look the other way or didn't do anything, because the prosecutions so far have been at the federal level, not the state level. Now, in the hindsight of all of this negative press he's gotten, what's he do? He appoints a director for program integrity. It's like, where was that years ago when you knew this was happening, dating back 5 years? By the way, did you see the Learing Center's doors are now shuttered?
So Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, a member of the squad, an embarrassment to the country, decides she's not going to ask any real questions. Cut 25.
Raise your hand if you oppose the pardon of George Santos.
Not playing this game.
It's not a game. It's real life. That means that you support this pardon of this corporation that frauded folks to the tune of $100 million.
Refusal to participate is not an expression.
Reclaiming my time.
Do you know the rules of committee? One way or the other.
Do you know the rules of committee? This is my time.
I know that I am here as a member of the public.
Reclaiming my time. You are not, Mr. Chair.
That's what I know.
You are not in order with the rules of the committee. This is my time. Yeah. This is my time.
And that is Walter Hudson, African-American Republican, Minnesota State Representative, who has come forward with specific facts, but she didn't want to hear it. She wants to talk about George Santos or Donald Trump and a pardon with a Honduras leader. Just a joke.
And what's really crazy is, as you know, a politician, and I realize she's not Minnesota. Ilhan Omar, by the way, is. She should be leaning in saying, you know what? We are totally against fraud. And you know what? If Governor Walz did this, we're going to hold him accountable as well, because at the end of the day, fraud is taxpayer money. And it doesn't matter what political stripe, who you voted for in the last presidential election, every resident of every state where fraud is rampant and widespread, you would think every politician would be bipartisan to go after those frauds and put criminals behind bars. Instead, what happened in Minnesota? They were ignored, and whistleblowers, by the way, were prosecuted and literally bullied, if you will, as opposed to those that actually committed the fraud.
So Hudson came out along with Christian Robbins, Walter Hudson, as I mentioned, Marion Rarick, along with Brendan Ballou, a former prosecutor for the Justice Department who appeared as the Democrats' witness, but he still was pinned to the mat a number of times, because this is just transparent. It's out there. I mean, to deny it, you can't. So what they do is bring up Trump and corruption and bring up what they don't like, Trump selling watches and things to that nature. One has nothing to do with the other, but it's just a total carnival. They went after one of these guys, went after Congressman James Summer Comer, and here is them calling him out. This is Summer Lee, another member of the squad. Cut 24.
Trump has attacked the oversight mechanisms within the federal government. He illegally fires 17 inspectors general and other key personnel. He goes after whistleblowers and he tries to roll back their protections. He routinely ignores the rampant corruption within his own administration.
Ms. Lee, the IGs are hired to identify fraud. They haven't identified fraud. The IGs have failed. But anyway.
You all have failed.
No,
you all continue
you
to
all
fail. We've
failed.
Done nothing. You've had the gavel, Mr. Comer. We barely do hearings on anything that actually affects
you. Have failed. You want to
have
more
power
money,
here,
more money,
and yet
money.
You don't do anything.
Got four witnesses, and these guys fight.
Unbelievable. And by the way, we talked this morning, Brian, you and I, about the fact that it's not just Minnesota. It's nationwide. In California, you're next.
In Ohio. Ohio's got a huge thing. This is a Republican-run state, and it's a mess. And a lot of it revolves around the Somali community. So if you are, I like Ro Khanna. Ro Khanna's running for president, clearly. And he's like, I'm going to crack down, bipartisan way, on fraud. Why are these people afraid to admit there was fraud in Minnesota? It's not on you. It's on them. Why not look into it and be responsible? It's crazy.
It's a bad look. It suggests they don't care about accountability.
All right, Griff. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Are you in tomorrow?
I'm with you tomorrow.
All right. That sounds great. And, of course, you got the weekend from 6 to 10, Saturday and Sunday.
You got it.
All right. By the way, we're going to take a short time out and come back with Jillian Michaels, celebrity fitness trainer, more importantly, almost a founding member of MAHA. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
You guys all know Jillian Michaels. She's got a brand new special out on Fox Nation called Toxic, America's Food Crisis. She hosts it and it's available right now. Jillian, did you just come out today?
No, 2 days ago.
So what was it? What do we expect? What can we see?
Well, honestly, you're going to learn some of the same with regard to how toxic our food is here in the country. You're going to learn why, though, and subsequently what you can do about it with small, affordable, accessible steps that will have a huge impact on your overall health.
What I want to do, too, is talk about that food pyramid, which I guess they reversed.
It's a really big deal, actually. People don't understand it. I'll explain it to you, but it directs hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right. And what I love about it, too, and critics think it's bad. I think it's good. They're normally 100 pages. This is 10.
Yeah.
We can understand it. I need bullet points. I'm not a nutritionist.
Well, you don't really need to be. The reason it was 100 pages before is because you were trying to convince people with pseudoscience that refined grains are good for them. Now it's like protein, whole grains, fruits and vegetables. Most people are turning around going, duh. And other people are saying, well, it's not accessible. And other people are not understanding the facts about saturated fat within the new pyramid and suggesting it's bad for you. But in truth, it's capped at 200 calories of
more,
saturated fat.
More on that in a moment with Jillian Michaels. Got the special out. Also, we have a food pyramid to talk about as MAHA is in action big time.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
When you look at the state of health for Americans, and you hear these statistics, just 74% of adults are obese or overweight, and early onset cancer diagnosis, what do you think is causing that?
Yeah, I think it's a really complex problem. A lot of it is related to food and what we eat. I think we eat too much food. I think we eat the wrong types of foods.
The average American eats a lot of what is now called ultra-processed foods.
Ultra-processed foods.
Ultra-processed foods.
Ultra-processed foods.
So that is a little of Jillian Michaels' special she has now on Fox Nation, America's favorite streaming app. It's called Toxic, America's Food Crisis. Jillian, as much as you know, when you're talking to these experts, did you learn something from this?
In all fairness, I pretty much know
you
all of it already.
You could have done it as a monologue.
It's my job to facilitate the ability of these experts to communicate their knowledge to everyday people who are there to learn. And I think what you're going to find is it's not as obvious as it seems. In other words, the system has been rigged against you.
Right.
What ultra-processed foods actually are, what they actually do, how they were created, why they were created, and then subsequently what you can do about
it. So why were they created? One of the reasons is to keep food fresh, to go with the size of our country?
No.
No. Why do you think it was? Cheaper?
Nope. These foods are engineered by teams of multidisciplinary scientists to get you to literally not be capable of eating just one. When they say, bet you can't eat just one, that is not a slogan. That's a business model. It's all about profit. And in the 1980s, Big Tobacco bought Big Food because the Surgeon General was going after cigarettes and it was working and sales were declining. And they took that playbook over to Big Food and they made all of that processed food ultra processed, highly palatable, highly addictive. They engineered your environment surrounding you with all this stuff. So you really can't ever just use willpower. Because the temptation never ceases. They commandeered the narrative. They told you, like, oh, you know, this ultra-processed grain is heart healthy. Oh, no, don't worry about being 100 pounds overweight. You could be healthy at any size. It's highly manipulative, very, very deep. And ultimately, this documentary exposes that.
So, you know, what's so interesting now is, in one way, this whole kind of a something different. Did you ever, I don't know if you ever could have foreseen something like Ozempic coming out. Well, while you're doing all your fitness things, trying to get people in shape, in comes the shot where people are losing weight, but they're also losing muscle. And now it's affecting everything. We're eating less. We're drinking less.
Yep.
And restaurants are paying the price. The liquor industry is paying the price.
That's really interesting for a host of reasons. So first of all, if you think about the ways in which Big Food engineered ultra-processed food to be highly addictive, literally they created something called the bliss point, which is this perfect ratio of fat, sugar, and salt that triggers the dopamine pleasure center of your brain. That's just one thing of many, right? But they literally call it the bliss point. The food is blissful, so you can't stop eating. What do these drugs do? They facilitate your ability to stop eating in two ways. Number one, they delay gastric emptying, which means you stay fuller for longer. The food sits in your gut for a longer period of time, which is arguably not healthy, but that's a separate conversation. And the second part is that they act on that pleasure center of your brain. So basically the food cannot trigger the bliss point and you're not hungry. So it facilitates your ability to eat less, but it comes at a price, literally and figuratively. It's not cut and dry, I'm afraid.
Understood. Let's talk about the food pyramid. What changed yesterday?
Okay, well, this really goes back to our conversation of the ways in which they rigged the system. So people think of this graphic and, you know, they may remember it from elementary school and it seems simple. To many, it seems obvious. To some, it seems unattainable.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the reality. This is not about informing the average American on what they should be eating at all. This is about the funnel of hundreds of billions of dollars. So back in the 70s, when they intended to create this food pyramid, they did it because it was meant to instruct what was fed to our kids in public schools, what was fed to our military, what we give to food assistance, SNAP, Women and Children, or WIC, as people know it. So Corn Refiners Association, Wheat Growers of America, Soybean Growers of America got in there, lobbied the USDA. You've got that revolving door that Kennedy talks about constantly, where you go from working at Big Food to the public health agencies. And that's how you got a food pyramid that recommended refined grains and processed seed oils and all of this garbage. And $600 billion over the last three decades of our tax dollars has gone to the big food companies and big ag. So now what this does, it takes that $600 billion and it funnels it towards the healthier foods on the pyramid so that better for you foods are more accessible to our most vulnerable population.
And now what people always say is, well, the better food, the whole foods, where a lot of the better stuff is more expensive. They don't even pop up with those high-end supermarkets in working class areas. But I think the RFK is attacking that too, right?
Well, the food pyramid is what feeds our kids in public schools. So
that's
it has to be provided. Same to the military. It has to be, all the stuff on the food pyramid has to be provided. For SNAP, you got to provide it. That's what the food pyramid says. Same thing, women and children. Now, ultimately, people do need to take agency. Of course, you have to make that choice. You have to engage. You have to be responsible. But it's pretty darn hard to take agency when the system is rigged against you. 74% of Americans are not obese or overweight because they're weak, lazy, or stupid. And it isn't genetics. In the 70s, before all of this happened, only 5% of our adult population was obese or overweight. We didn't have a quantum leap in genetics over the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. So it's about unrigging the system and educating people so they can take informed, powerful actions that will create change.
All right, so 50% of Americans have pre-diabetes or diabetes. 33% of teens suffer from diabetes, pre-diabetes. 20% of children and adolescents suffer from obesity, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And 18.5% of young adults have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And you would think, well, these kids are just sitting down on their phones and they're overeating. What you're saying is maybe they're not. It's just what they're eating.
They are overeating. Okay, so think of it as follows. They're overeating, and this food is designed to make them overeat.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, the food is calorie dense. Calories are units of energy, right? So what is fat? It's stored energy. It's energy you consumed that you didn't utilize. Then the body said, gosh, I have this energy reserve. What do I do with this? Oh, let's shove it in the fat cells. So they're consuming too many calories, which is ultra-processed foods are calorie dense.
Mm-hmm.
They lack nutrients. They are filled with anti-nutrients, fake fats, fake flavors, preservatives, so on and so forth. So kids are not eating, not getting nutrients. They're getting a host of chemicals that can mess up their endocrine system and their metabolism over years. They're getting calorie dense garbage that begets their desire to eat more of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all bad across the board.
So this one thing, RFK, start eating more meat. So we were told avoid red meat. How do you feel about that?
But he's right. He's right. Now, listen, I don't want to overwhelm people. In other words, you're going to feel like I can't win. And the point here is that yes, you should be eating grass-fed beef from regenerative soil, which means, you know, they're putting nutrients back in the soil. It's not over-farmed. Because if you think about, okay, well, where are cows getting their nutrients? They're getting it from the grass and the soil. If it's depleted, they lack nutrients. If they're conventionally raised, they've got hormones, antibiotics, a host of other stuff, genetically engineered crops they're being fed. So look, at the end of the day, going organic, grass-fed, regenerative is going to be the best option. If you can't afford that and you need like a conventionally raised cow, just a regular steak at a restaurant, it's still a heck of a lot better than French fries and pizza and soda. And you can get leaner cuts of that meat.
Right.
Because a lot of the stuff that's bad sits in the fat. So it's not about the fat, it's about the stuff that fat would hold in that case.
So Brooke Rollins, the ag secretary, this is what's new. The ag secretary working with the HHS is kind of new. They just kept separate on separate lanes, separate lobbyists. Here's what she said yesterday, cut 53.
Recent data show that fruits, vegetables, dairy, and proteins, including eggs, pork, and ground beef, are becoming even more affordable every day for our American people. American households enjoy the most affordable and abundant food in the world, and today's release only reinforces that reality. A healthy meal is within reach for all American families. These new dietary guidelines are a framework which is meant to be customized to meet the needs, the preferences, and the financial status of all American families.
Exactly.
So I was able to talk with farmers, went to North Dakota for an event, and they go, hey, do you want to talk to some of the farm community? And they said, yeah. And I talked to some of them. I did not know this. We have like a national shortage of cattle.
Yeah.
And I, what is happening between the grazing and whatever, and because of the de-emphasis on it, and because there's a theory out there that the cattle and the methane gas was destroying the ozone layer. Right. That was behind all of this. That's what comes with this impossible burgers and everything.
The rhetoric, the propaganda. You know, you ask, like, how do I feel about people eating red meat? You know, in my industry, they demonized red meat.
Absolutely.
Because it's not profitable. Yeah, they're like, what about the Cattle Farmers Association of America? A journalist asked me that this morning when she was interviewing me about the food pyramid. And I was like, do you realize, like, they have no money? Don't you think if they did, they would have commandeered the food pyramid in the first place? The reason the friggin' thing was 100 pages long is because it was filled with pseudoscience to demonize protein, saturated fat. And the reality of saturated fat, and I've spoken to many MDs and PhDs on the matter, bottom line is, it will affect some people's cholesterol, not most, irregardless of that fact. It is limited with regard to the new food pyramid. So if you don't overconsume, you're perfectly safe either way. You don't even need to engage in that debate. It only recommends 200 calories worth of saturated fat to begin with.
Right. Here's RFK yesterday. He says, eat real food. Cut 52.
Protein and healthy fats are essential. And we're wrongly discouraged in prior dietary guidelines. We are ending the war on saturated fats. Diets rich in vegetables and fruits reduce disease risk more effectively than many drugs. Whole grains outperform refined carbohydrates. Added sugars, especially sugar-sweetened beverages, drive metabolic disease. And today our government declares war on added sugar. Highly processed foods loaded with additives, added sugar, and excess salt damage health and should be avoided. As Secretary of Health and Human Services, my message is clear. Eat real food.
Eat real food.
Can I teach you, or can I elaborate a bit on what he just said? So another reason that saturated fat has been demonized throughout the years is because they wanted to sell you seed oils. And of course, you've had, you know, PhDs in nutrition science come out and say, we don't really know that these things are bad for you. If in the documentary, we show you how these are processed and chemicals like hexane, lye, bleaching clays, ultra pasteurization, which creates trans fats. Like, it's not necessarily the seed oil. It's the ways in which they process it that are irrefutably horrible for your health. But think about seed oils. Again, Corn Refining Association of America, Soybean Growers Association of America. It's all about money. Mm-hmm. It was never about your health.
So beef tallow?
Listen, ideal world, olive oil, right? So if you have a continuum of fats, it's going to be a polyunsaturated, monounsaturated, and then we can get into saturated, but the absolute worst thing are going to be trans fats, fractionated oils that you're getting from these processed seed oils. Beef tallow is fine. Is olive oil better? Yeah, kind of irrefutably.
You mean tastes better or is better?
Better for your health.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, but beef tallow in a controlled calorie diet is perfectly fine.
Right. He's big into that, RFK.
He is big into that. I personally would suggest leaning heavy into the olive oil conversation. We have a robust amount of data to suggest it's like bad for no one, great for everyone. And it does recommend that. They talk about nuts and seeds and omega-3 fish oils and avocado oil and olive oil, and that's wonderful. The goal is not to demonize beef tallow because they did it in order to sell you processed seed oils.
And before we go, I want to play one more clip from your special. The special is called Toxic: America's Food Crisis. Here Jillian talks to Callie Means. Cut 56.
The administration released a MAHA report that cited four pillars of chronic disease. Can you tell me what they are?
The pillars of chronic disease that we're talking about are environmental exposures, food, sedentary lifestyle, and chronic stress / sleep.
I mean, these are super positive, basic things. And we're being called misinformation radicals for talking about why 95% of our medical budget goes to pills and medical procedures to manage sickness, and why we're not thinking, with that $5 trillion we spend per year on medicine, can we actually lower chronic stress? Can we actually encourage more movement? Can we encourage more whole food? And can we really understand the cumulative exposure risks from all of these chemicals in our environment?
So You like the four pillars.
I mean, the four pillars are obvious. Right. I would have you note that he mentioned sleep in there, Brian.
Yes, I know.
Brian conceded to me behind the scenes that he only sleeps like 4.5 hours. So I was yelling at him just a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, well, okay. But it's obvious stuff. It's chemicals in your environment. Duh. It's sitting too much. Right. No kidding. It's the consumption of ultra-processed garbage that actually is in food. Of course, not getting enough sleep and being overly stressed. Like, it's everything you already know. What you don't know is the ways in which the system is rigged against you. That's what we're exposing in this documentary. And subsequently, what you can do on your own accord, of your own agency, to take control.
And also check out Jillian's podcast. She's a host of Keeping It Real podcast. We can find that everywhere, right?
Yeah, everywhere.
And of course, you got the special now, America's Food Crisis. Jillian, I'm glad it brought you through.
Thank you so much. We're
on your hit list, because I know you come through. You come in through in surges, so we appreciate it. And they're finally listening to Jillian Michaels.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And the federal government, which means all of you got to pay attention. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. There's so much going on. I know everyone's talking about the shooting, but the bigger story yesterday, we're going to get to the bottom of the 37-year-old that got shot while driving away from police, which ICE agents. It's not okay to say, I like cops, but I don't like ICE agents. It's the same thing. Oh, I like local cops. I just don't like the state police. Oh, I don't like the National Guard, but I like the cops in my neighborhood or the sheriff's office. No. Either you understand what law enforcement does, each has different specialties, or just get off the train and just expose who you are. Big picture, the fraud that's happening in Minnesota, if Republicans, and even if it comes to their states, make fraud the focus, it'll not only does it show you, it's good for the Freedom Caucus, who cares about spending, responsible spending. It's going to make everybody re-examine all these social programs. I feel bad about the homeless. I feel bad about people who don't have food or don't have enough food or shelter. But then when you find out people are abusing the system, sending it out of our country, that's what Republicans should focus on. James Comer and company doing it. But don't do it just for political purposes. Expose it for your political success. It helps the country. It's the most patriotic thing you can do. Getting our fiscal house in order. Brian Kilmeade Show.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where our mayor, who's been here a week, is actually turning out to be worse than anyone thought, in my view. Socialists must love him. I mean, he's every bit a socialist. The people he hired and the irresponsible things that he puts out. I mean, the guy condemned Venezuela, our action in Venezuela within hours, as if we care about the foreign policy of a New York City mayor. And then he calls the ICE incident that happened in Minneapolis yesterday that saw a 37-year-old who tried to run over an ICE agent who got shot and died. They called the ICE agent a murder. I mean, this took a minute. Doesn't want an investigation. Doesn't want to wait to see what happens. This is what we're in the middle of. But this is what these people elected. I don't get to vote because I live on Long Island, but I got to suffer from it because they don't let us vote in New York City. Mark Thiessen at the bottom of the hour. Congressman Brandon Gill, an up-and-coming star and an emerging star on Capitol Hill, will be with us in a moment. But let's get to the big three.
Number three.
As you've seen today, two more ships were seized. We are in the midst right now and, in fact, about to execute on a deal to take all the oil. They have oil that is stuck in Venezuela. They can't move it because of our quarantine and because it's sanctioned. We are going to take between 30 and 50 million barrels of oil.
Yep. Trump's boldness on the stage is very impressive. Finally, we're actually pushing for strength on the world stage, so we get prosperity here at home. Just look at the recent activities. Massive military muscle he's showing in Venezuela. We're seeing it also with Russia, as they told us to lift to keep our hands off the tanker. But guess what? We didn't and took it anyway. We signed off on sanctions on Russia that's going to go into play next week. Bipartisan, extremely tough, while showing us not backing out and staying on top of Iran. We'll give you the latest.
Number two.
The president's about to make some really big announcements. And what we're going to do is we want to preserve the wealth that a lot of people have accrued in their homes while also making it possible for young people to afford their first home.
Yep, that's J.D. Vance yesterday. The Trump team makes major moves on housing and the economy. The market didn't like it, but I do.
Number one.
A motorist who federal officials said tried to run down an immigration agent in Minneapolis is dead tonight. She was shot by the ICE agent. The FBI and state law enforcement are investigating. Homeland Security Director Kristi Noem calls it an act of domestic terrorism and says the driver tried to kill the agent. The mayor of Minneapolis says that is, quote, garbage. Minnesota's governor says the tragedy was, quote, totally predictable and totally avoidable.
Minneapolis continues to be a national embarrassment of a city. First, we have more facts about the massive fraud under Governor Walz's watch, and now the harassing of ICE agents, which I just discussed. Let's bring in Congressman Brandon Gill, who is part of the committee, the oversight committee that was able to get some very valuable information yesterday on the oversight committee when they brought in four different people to testify. Congressman, welcome back.
Brian, thanks for having me.
What's your big takeaway from yesterday?
You know, the big takeaway was that the fraud that we've seen in Minnesota from predominantly the Somali community there has been not only egregious and rampant, and I think even still we don't know quite the scale and scope how large this fraud is. But what we do know is that the Democrat administration there under Governor Walz not only looked the other way, but virtually encouraged this fraud to occur. And he did it purely for political gain. It was an implicit deal that he made with the community there that you can defraud the taxpayers, you can set up these autism centers or children's learning centers or leering centers, as one of the signs called it. And you don't have to have children, you don't have to actually do anything with this money, but we're going to continue doling out taxpayer dollars to you. And the deal was basically, you continue this fraud, we'll look the other way, and you support us politically. I think that's what really, truly emerged from the hearing yesterday. It's absolutely egregious, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. That was the first of two hearings. We've got another hearing coming up in a few weeks with Governor Walz, and I think that one's going to be particularly enlightening as well.
Is he going to show up?
You know, we hope that he does. We've invited him to come. I think that we're still ironing out some of the details, but I expect him to come.
Yeah, you also have the AG invited, right? Has Ellison answered you?
I believe he's been invited. I don't know the current status of that. We're still working out some of the details, but he needs to show up and answer for this. You know, this is blown up into a national scandal. Remember, a lot of these programs are administered by the state, but they take in federal dollars. So this is something that impacts the entire nation, not just the people of Minnesota.
So you know what we found out yesterday? The Quality Learing Center, which is the name back as Learning Center, has closed. The closure of their license, it was closed, and then now they are closed effective January 6th, so yesterday. The provider is unable to reopen without reapplying for a license. So they finally closed that place. Here's a little of the give and take that took place yesterday. Brandon, you're in the middle of this. Cut 19.
The Tim Walz administration has utterly failed to protect Minnesota taxpayers and vulnerable citizens, ignoring years of credible reports and retaliating against those who spoke up, often by claiming they were racist or Islamophobic. Tim Walz and the Democrats have repeatedly protected their political base at the expense of all Minnesotans.
When do you think Governor Walz knew about this fraud?
From the very beginning.
Do you have any doubt that Governor Tim Walz knew about this fraud as it was occurring?
He absolutely knew that it was occurring.
So we had these people come out. They're basically whistleblowers, and they look like also, from what I could see, there was retaliation for people that came forward and implicit threats, almost like the mob. Hey, where do your kids go to school? You know, what kind of car do you drive?
Yep, and we're getting more and more information from whistleblowers every day. Remember, these people have been intimidated pretty clearly intimidated, brought in things about their personal lives, about their family, being asked, you know, what's going to happen to you if you actually blow the whistle on this fraud. So we're going to be getting more and more information in every day. But this is part of a broad scheme that Democrats have enacted in the United States that combines mass migration with a welfare state. They say we'll bring in millions of illegal aliens, we'll open up our doors, we'll allow people to abuse our asylum system. And then once they're here, we will create a welfare state that has no checks, that does not determine eligibility, that does not make sure that federal tax dollars or even state dollars are being spent appropriately. And we're going to give it to these people. And in exchange, we expect them to vote for us. That's what happened here. It really is that simple. It was a Faustian bargain that the Democrats in Minnesota made with this community. And now the American people see how bad it was. They see the scope, at least the beginnings of the scope of this fraud. And like I said, we're going to get to the bottom of it, because this is you cannot have a functional constitutional republic whenever large communities are being effectively bought off for votes.
Congressman Brandon Gill, our guest. So, Congressman, you had some great stats, and you grilled Brendan Belew, he's the Democratic witness on it, about the Somali community. So most of the people, you're not a racist, I'm not a racist. The facts are that most everybody involved, over 80 people have been indicted, convicted, are from the Somali community. They're a community of 80,000, and the leverage they had over you is they're not going to vote for you, and if you really got aggressive about it, they'll just call you a racist. And it kind of neutralized the critics. But has from what you could tell, these Somalis managed to be part of the melting pot?
You know, that's the astounding thing here. And first of all, we're not going to be intimidated by baseless accusations of racism anymore. That's simply not going to work. We're going to look at reality, the facts on the ground, and make a realistic determination about what happened. But no, there's very little assimilation happening. Only about half of the Somalis in Minnesota, even after being in the United States for a decade, speak English very well. That's astounding. That's not assimilation. What we've also found is that 81% of the Somalis in that community in Minnesota are on welfare. Even after being in the United States for 10 years, 78% continue to be on welfare. That is not the American dream. That is not people coming into the United States trying to make their way, trying to build up independent lives that are self-sufficient. That is people coming in, realizing that they can hop on the dole. And again, Democrats are opening up the doors for this, and they're effectively being bought off for votes. And I think that the extent of the welfare state, particularly in Minnesota, also opens up the door for unlawful fraud. But no, there's very little assimilation happening. And that's a problem, because that tears apart the cultural fabric of this country, the cultural foundation that this country was built upon, that all of our opportunities come from. And it's being undermined by Democrats.
No, I know Treasury is looking to see where the money went. Now, if you have a Porsche and a mansion, I have a clue. But if the money's actually leaving the country, that would be something that would be, I mean, that is treasonous, especially if it ends up fueling a terror organization affiliated with Al-Qaeda in Somalia. And we have these reports, unsubstantiated so far, from TSA agents who said, you know, they come through with briefcases full of money, which, by the way, is allowed. You're allowed to bring money through the TSA, but it's also got to be recorded. Have you guys thought about pursuing that avenue, that venue, where the money went?
We have, and we've subpoenaed what's called SARS, suspicious activity reports, from the Treasury. And Scott Bessent at the Treasury has been great to work with. He wants to get to the bottom of this as well, just as much as we do. So we are looking into that angle. You know, it's not unreasonable to think that whenever there's, at this point, we know for sure hundreds of millions of dollars being going to these fraudulent activities, that a good chunk of that's going to be sent overseas and is likely in the hands of terrorists like the Al-Shabaab network in Somalia. So that's something that we're tracking very closely and are going to find out.
I mean, I saw a Ro Khanna come out and say, I want to find it, get to the bottom of this corruption. I want to do it in a bipartisan way. He obviously wants to run for president. So are there any Democrats that have come up to you and said, yeah, I want to get to the bottom of this? This bothers me as an American. Forget about their political future. It just bothers me that all this money is not going to kids with autism. It's gotten on to feeding families. It's going to people that just want to get rich and get the money out of the country. Have you heard that?
You know, we had a couple Democrats sort of allude to that, Ro Khanna being the most prominent one, or the biggest one, the most clear. But other than that, not really. I think that the line that the Democrats have taken here is that Republicans are racist, that they're trying to attack a particular community for being in the United States. And that's simply not the case. You and I both know that if anybody was defrauding taxpayers, we would want to go after them. It doesn't matter who you are, what community you reside in. But the reality is that this was fraud conducted predominantly by the Somali community in Minnesota. So that's what we're going after. That's what we're trying to learn about. But to be candid, most Democrats don't seem interested in that. You know, occasionally you'll hear them pay lip service to the idea of stopping fraud. But when it really comes down to it, when it really comes down to having a serious hearing like we had yesterday or doing serious investigations, they don't want to be involved.
How do you feel about this expanding to California? Because we keep hearing that that's the mother load.
I think that, that should be the next step here. You know, again, this is a mixture of mass migration, open borders, and an unchecked welfare state. And that's exactly what you see in California. I think there's likely billions of dollars of fraud there as well. And that should be the next step for us.
I want you to hear, for people to know, not know it, or we missed it because of the shooting in Minneapolis, had to pull away from it. Here's a little of how the Democrats tried to distract. This is a member of the squad, Congresswoman Summer Lee, Cut 24.
Trump has attacked the oversight mechanisms within the federal government. He illegally fires 17 inspectors general and other key personnel. He goes after whistleblowers and he tries to roll back their protections. He routinely ignores the rampant corruption within his own administration.
Ms. Lee, the IGs are hired to identify fraud. They haven't identified fraud. The IGs have failed. But anyway,
you all have failed.
No,
you all continue to fail. We've done nothing. You've had the gavel, Mr. Comer. We barely do hearings on anything that actually affects
change. You have failed. You want to have power here,
and yet you don't do anything.
Yet you have these four witnesses in front of you, and they just decide, let's bring up Trump. What's that like?
You know, it's frustrating because I think to your point earlier, you would expect fraud to be one of those things that both sides of the aisle would agree on, that we could both agree that we don't think that tax dollars, your money that you worked hard for, should be going towards fraudulent activity. But, you know, what they want to do is deflect and use this use that hearing to attack the president, which they do every single day, regardless of the great work that the president or House Republicans are doing. So it's frustrating, but that's just something that we deal with every day. The reality is that it was the Democrat Party that covered this up. It was the Democrat Party that Tim Walz knew that this fraud was happening for at least a decade. This was public. It was in the media. He knew it from day one, and he did nothing to stop it. And in fact, his administration intimidated whistleblowers, intimidated everybody by labeling them as racist or Islamophobic if they were going to call out this fraud. So that, you know, it's frustrating, but that's what we're up against every
but
day.
But I heard Governor Abbott is looking into fraud in Texas. That's a red state, obviously, that you're from.
Right. And whether it's a red or a blue state, I think we should be going after fraud anywhere. If there's fraud in Texas, I absolutely applaud Governor Abbott for trying to get to the bottom of it. I'll do everything that I can to help in that effort. I suspect that if there is any amount of fraud, Democrats are going to jump on it if it's a red state. But I can tell you on our side of the aisle, on the Republican side, we're going to be looking for it wherever it is, red state, blue state. Whether it's from American citizens, whether it's from illegal aliens, we want to end fraud. We've got to cut this kind of just egregious waste of the American tax dollar.
I just think when it comes to guys like Governor Walz, just knowing, like, instead of saying, you know, why did you look the other way? I didn't. Okay. But I have these statements to show you that you did. Did you not threaten this person? Are they lying when they said X, Y, and Z? You always come to these hearings so well prepared. Is that something you, I know you like Jim Jordan, and that was one person you like to emulate. Is that something you always focused on? And is this the committee you've always wanted to be on?
You know, it really is. I love the Oversight Committee. I definitely look up to Congressman Jordan. He is an excellent member, comes prepared every single day and just brings the heat. But we, you know, we take this stuff seriously. This is a serious matter. Billions of our tax dollars being defrauded, and it's our job as members of Congress to come prepared, come to get the right answers, come to get to the bottom of this. So we spend a lot of time with it.
I hear it and I see it. Congressman, best of luck. We'll continue to follow you, and thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. Mark Thiessen, bottom of the hour. Your call's next. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, I'll tell you what, one thing, I saw the interview yesterday with J.D. Vance and Jesse on our channel. And the one thing that's interesting about J.D. Vance, he can go to substance, very substantive. He's very substantive. He does the issues back and forth. Very intelligent, obviously. You don't go to an Ivy League school, come out of nowhere from a rural community and do extremely well and not be smart. And we've already seen him on the stage. But what he said about Mamdani is 100% true, and I think what he wants. He said, I like that Mamdani ran for mayor, and he ran on affordability. He wasn't running on any woke stuff. He wasn't running on anything green, or he wasn't talking about congestion price. He wanted to talk about kitchen and table issues. And he said, I want that debate. And the reason why he wants the debate is because as soon as you get past the headline, put both sides side by side and ask, who's going to make life more affordable? Are you going to tax the most successful people in the country, providing the majority of the tax dollars, and say they're the problem, they're not paying enough when they're almost paying everything? The top 10% pay 80% of all taxes. Are you going to just rent control things and fix prices? Or are you going to level the playing field to make it possible for everyone to be successful? And if you look at who burned the house down and who's fixing the house, I think it's pretty clear Republicans have a leg up.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
As you've seen today, two more ships were seized. We are in the midst right now and, in fact, about to execute on a deal to take all the oil. They have oil that is stuck in Venezuela. They can't move it because of our quarantine and because it's sanctioned. We are going to take between 30 and 50 million barrels of oil. We're going to sell it in the marketplace at market rates, not at the discounts Venezuela was getting. That money will then be handled in such a way that we will control how it is dispersed in a way that benefits the Venezuelan people, not corruption, not the regime.
So that is Secretary of State Marco Rubio explaining how we're going to move forward when it comes to Venezuela. He said, we're going to hold on to the oil. That's going to be our leverage. We're not going to rotate governments and say in comes the rightfully elected leader, because with that, their concern, if I can extrapolate what they're saying, they're concerned about some guerrilla war breaking out. And they have in their mind what happens a lot when regimes change. It's never smooth. Look at Libya. Get rid of Gaddafi. All of a sudden, these tribes break out. It's never been calm since. And the Russians have more influence there than we do. So in Venezuela, he says, I'm going to leave this woman. We know about this woman, as dicey as she is, clear socialist, Hugo Chavez disciple, Maduro aide, vice president, now president. They get, you have no choice. We'll come back and take all of you out if we have to. Like we took out your leader, now he's in a Brooklyn prison. And they seem to have gotten the message. What I also think is fascinating, yesterday while he was sitting down, the President of the United States, with the New York Times for close to 2 hours. I know, wrap your head around that for a while. For 2 hours, he sits with the New York Times. Never gives a guy a break. Been a little bit fairer than before, but still, for the most part, Trump is just bad all the time. At least the Washington Post expanded its editorial page. He gets a call from the president of Colombia, the one that says, come and get me 2 days ago. Yeah, if you want me, come and get me. You're not going to scare me. He says horrible things about the president. The president says, you know what? You might be next if you don't keep your mouth shut. He calls. The calls go so well, he invites him to the White House. It's about foreign policy that's changing rapidly in every day. It's happening now. Mark Thiessen here, former chief presidential speechwriter, Washington Post columnist, Fox News contributor. Mark, first off, what about that call yesterday from the Colombian leader? Man, he changed his tune.
Well, because he knew he was going to be the next Maduro. I mean, Maduro said, come and get me, and look what happened. I think he quickly realized that was not a smart approach, and maybe he ought to try something different, and it seems to be working. But this is how Trump is all the time. Look, if the Ayatollah Khamenei would call him and say, hey, we want to cut a deal, he'd invite him to the White House. It's like he dominates the escalation ladder. He dares you to go up the top of the escalation ladder, but offers you a way down. This is how Donald Trump operates with every leader around the world. And so it's no surprise he's doing it with Colombia as well. And Colombia chose wisely. Maduro chose poorly.
So let's talk about what the Secretary of State said. We're going to hold on to the oil. And we're going to control it, make sure the Venezuelan people benefit from it. But that's going to be his leverage to make sure that this government stays in line. Is that what you think?
So here's the thing. I think that ultimately we're going to have to help the Venezuelan opposition get into power over time, because the only way you're not going to be able to get oil out of Venezuela. Venezuela is broken by this regime, right? The oil you need. Nobody's going to invest in Venezuela right now under these circumstances to extract more oil, right? The only way you do
Mark, I think they expect the oil companies to make some commitments today. You think?
They might, but they're not. But it's not going to be lasting unless you have rule of law, right? And so you're going to, over time, this not tomorrow, but over time, you're going to have a transition to a government that clearly has the support of the Venezuelan people. But the idea that we were going to install the democratically elected leader with who? We have no troops on the ground. Do these people want to go back and have bring David Bremer out of retirement and have him establish a coalition provisional authority and depathify the regime? You can't do that. That's precisely what Trump is trying to fix, which are all the mistakes that were made in those efforts, right? And so I think people need to realize that what Trump is doing is he is redefining conservative internationalism, right? You look at this. You just look at the last year. This is not what the Republican isolationists thought they were getting when Donald Trump came in. He bombed the Houthis. He's bombed Iran. He's bombed Nigeria. He's bombed Syria. He's bombed Venezuela, and he's now boarding Russian flag tankers in the North Atlantic. This is some of the boldest exercise of American military might on the world stage that I've seen in my lifetime. He's just not sending boots on the ground everywhere to then impose democracy. What he's figured out is, look, Maduro, we got Maduro, and now we're going to have whoever comes in place of him do what we tell them to do. And and as he said, if she doesn't do what I tell her to do, she's going to get Maduro treatment or worse. And then the next one, and the next one. So he's finding a way to exercise American military strength on the world stage. And the alternative to this is not going back to the old ways of doing things. It's isolationism. It's what the Tucker Carlsons of the world want to do, which is don't do any of this stuff. They didn't want him to bomb Iran. They don't want him to invade Venezuela. They want us to pull back from the world. And Trump is doing the opposite of that. And he's saving conservative internationalism and conservative for international leadership. And I think rather than nitpicking everything he does, I think people on the right need to get behind him, because this is the way we lead in the world stage in the 21st century.
You mean people on the right? I think in terms of the Senate, you only got one guy, Rand Paul, who's never happy about anything. He thinks Iran's great. And I think he's useless, Rand Paul. He's an ideologue that doesn't belong. He belongs as a professor. He belongs in a think tank. Nothing against think tanks. I know you're in one.
Hey,
I know.
Easy.
But here's Senator Chris Murphy, not impressed. Cut 36.
This is an insane plan. They are talking about stealing the Venezuelan oil at gunpoint for a period of time undefined as leverage to micromanage the country.
This guy's ridiculous. He's trying to run for president, but he was in the same briefing that most people were impressed with, not Chris Murphy.
Well, first of all, Chris Murphy a few years ago was talking about why isn't Trump doing more against Maduro.
Yep.
So now that he's done that, and nobody's talking about stealing Venezuelan oil. No, we both Trump and Rubio have said we're going to take the oil, we're going to use it for the benefit of the Venezuelan people. This is how we influence the regime going forward. And so, I just think that people need to relax. What he is doing is good. He is leading on the world stage. By the way, he's done more in terms of bold foreign policy moves in his first 12 months of his second term than he did in his whole first 4 years in office, in terms of in terms of exercising American military muscle on the world stage. This is a golden age of American international leadership that he's ushering in right now. And I just think give him some grace, let him figure out how to do it. He's trying to pioneer a new way of leading on the world stage that doesn't involve going in and sending boots on the ground to every country in the world. And we got to get behind him and help him.
Mark, a couple of things. I said, all right, wait, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, the Russians said, do me a favor, stop pursuing that tanker. It's ours. And we kept pursuing the tanker. And then yesterday that we were told, and I'm not sure it's been confirmed, someone told me to back off this, but it was reported that the Russian submarine was guiding the tanker that reflagged in the middle of its journey. So yesterday we took the tanker, and the Russians are unhappy about it, but we don't care. The boldness, I cannot tell you how much I love that move.
I'm with you 100%. 1,000%. I mean, just and as I understand it, they were like literally painting a Russian flag on the side of the tanker as they were going to try and reflag themselves. I mean, it's a joke.
And they changed it to the Mariana or something.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, you know, first of all, I think he's done with Putin. He's at least for the moment. Putin horribly misplayed his hand in this last round of negotiations. Trump got Zelensky to come along and they had a 90% of a deal done. He spent 2 hours on the phone going through it point by point with Putin, and he cornered Putin basically with the deal. Putin didn't want to say no because when you say no to Trump, that guess what? The hammer comes down on you. So he was saying yes. Trump thought he had a deal, and then he pulled this, you know, ridiculous thing, a fake attack on his residence from the Ukrainians. Trump saw through that in 2 seconds, and he realized Putin really is, he's never going to make a deal unless I squeeze him. And so this is the start of that. We're going to, you know, we took one Russian tanker, we can take another. I mean, this is, you know, I think Putin has misplayed his hand terribly.
Well, 100% right. The other thing, so Lindsey Graham said yesterday that next week the president's going to sign off on the bipartisan sanctions they got over 90 votes in the Senate. To now they're going to sanction second parties. So India, Brazil, Turkey, China, who are buying Russian oil, will now be sanctioned. So this is the hammer coming down, and this is him coming full circle.
Absolutely. Look, the answer with Trump is always take the outstretched hand, because the hammer is a lot worse. And there are a lot of slow learners on the world stage. Hopefully, Delcy Rodriguez is not a slow learner. Hopefully, it seems like the president of Colombia is not so much of a slow learner. It seems like Vladimir Putin is a slow learner. And so he's gonna have to learn the hard way. But you can learn the hard way, or you can learn the easy way. You do what Donald Trump tells you.
So we have Zelensky indicated that there were progress in the bilateral guarantees and trilateral guarantees.
Yep.
We have Jared Kushner in these meetings over in Paris and Steve Witkoff. My hope is that Witkoff doesn't pick up the phone again and tell Vladimir Putin to call President Trump and say whatever, because he seems to be I hear he's a great guy, but he's extremely pro-Putin. And I'm not sure why, but it seems to me at this point, Putin's made him look terrible too. So he should realize that he embarrassed him in Alaska.
Yep.
So I'm
going to kind of dissent from you a little bit there. And I used to feel the same way you did about Witkoff until I met him and talked to him. And what I realize is that Witkoff is probably one of the most unfairly maligned people in American diplomacy, because basically what he is doing is trying to exercise Donald Trump's will, which is to get a deal. And he has never once threatened the Ukrainians, forced them to take anything that Putin wanted. He's been when he's presented with information that contradicts what Putin is saying, he's very open to it. I think that Witkoff has actually served the president very well, and he's trying to help his friend get a deal. He doesn't have an agenda, so I don't think he's pro Putin. I just think he's trying to bring two people together. And most of the mistakes he's made, and he's made a bunch of them, have been mistakes of not of malice, but of just lack of knowledge, because it's not his part of the world.
That's just it. If I don't have knowledge, which is so many things I don't have knowledge, I can't list them all. I would never go to a meeting with Vladimir Putin without my own interpreter and without a couple of aides.
That's fair. I mean, he's made some mistakes, but I think his heart is in the right place. He's a good guy. He's trying to help the president get a deal. But let's look where it's gone. I mean, if you can't argue with the results, he has helped negotiate a deal that's 90% done, that the Ukrainians are happy with, that involves massive security guarantees, and is so good, that is so favorable to Ukraine that Putin won't take it. That's where we've ended up. So, you know, I got to give him credit. I think he's actually managed the process pretty well.
The thing that I find inexcusable and unexplainable is that before Zelensky visited 2 times ago, he quickly got Putin on the phone.
Yeah.
And they were about to sell him Tomahawks. They were about to and that would have forced Putin's hand, in my humble opinion, more than anything else. But instead, Tomahawk. He got Putin on the phone. Zelensky comes in. He says, I'm not going to sell you the Tomahawks. They're too hard to learn, which is not the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that we'll get there eventually. I think that's part of the escalation ladder. Okay.
I got another topic. Iran, 89 protests across 21 provinces. Yesterday there was 27 protests through 27 provinces. 19 protests in Tehran city alone. And now we understand they admitted that one of the security guys trying to suppress things got killed by the protesters. So someone's got guns on the other side for a change.
Yep.
I get the sense this feels different, Mark. What do you think the appropriate role for us is in this, if any?
Well, I think the president has said what it is, which is that if they start killing protesters, he's going to come to their defense.
Well, they've already killed 30.
So I think that you don't do that when Donald Trump threatens you and you ignore his threats. The Iran regime has already once learned the consequence of that. I think they're going to learn it again. And I think it's entirely possible that in the coming year, there's going to be a democratic government in Venezuela. I think that the Iranian regime could fall. I think the Cuban regime could fall, because right now Cuba is in a world of hurt, because that country was about to collapse after the Soviet Union collapsed because all of their subsidies disappeared. Then the Europeans came in and invested and saved them and gave them hard currency. And then Helms-Burton passed, and that cut off the European financing. And so they turned to Venezuela. And the only thing keeping them afloat is Venezuelan oil and Venezuelan subsidies, and that's gone now. I think that you could see, think about this. The Castro regime and its successors have survived every American president since John F. Kennedy, and I don't know that they're going to survive Donald Trump.
I agree.
And I don't think the Iranian regime is going to survive Donald Trump the way they're going right now. I think you could see a massive transformation of the evil regimes of the world under Trump's because of what Trump has unleashed on the world
stage.
Which
people understand, and I'm sure a lot of our audience does, is that it's not just a matter of Iran's government changing and no longer being a problem. They finance the Houthis, they finance Hezbollah, they finance Hamas. They keep that. Look, I know the Gulf states don't love Israel, but they're living with Israel. Iran is making sure that Israel's life is always stressed and always threatened. That could end if we end this regime. So there's a lot of good ripple effects that could come out of here. Mark,
amen.
Yeah, this is a very exciting time. Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Take care, Brian.
Back in a moment.
Keeping you informed, engaged, and always a step ahead. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Fraud is never acceptable, and it undermines public trust, whoever commits it. But let's remember that some of the worst fraud and corruption is actually found at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
It is a case of stolen valor for this president to put his name above the name of John F. Kennedy. That is a fraud being perpetrated on this country right now.
The president of the United States and the administration are engaged in fraudulent behavior literally daily.
We're living through the most corrupt presidential administration in American history.
So there you go. That's what Democrats ask when you're trying to get to the bottom of Minnesota fraud, which is rampant. No one denies it, but you want to just avoid it and just change the subject entirely. Imagine going to an event and being asked to speak and just totally changing the subject to a bunch of things that nobody cares about except you and maybe your friends and family. So that's just it. I mean, you have four people in front of you. Three are Republicans. One is there as a Democratic witness to talk about the rampant fraud and who knew about it and when. We know billions of dollars have left. No one denies it. It's already been exposed on a citizen journalist that went out there, and it's going to be in other states too. You saw the abuse after during the pandemic, and then it's continued with fake learning centers, fake healthcare centers, fake childcare centers. And so might be leaving the country fighting terrorism, and they say, we're upset that Donald Trump put his name in the Kennedy Center. I mean, it's what people just hate about it. So, Republicans, when they don't like a theory or they don't want to do the January 6th hearings, they'll do it, but at least they'll say to the topic. None of them did. But Can't wait for Governor Waltz to be there, because guys like Brandon Gill, who've been on earlier with us, congressman from Texas, they're going to be ready. They're not just going to say, I think you're lying. They're going to say, these people know you're lying.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Appreciate you being here. Comedian Adam Hunter coming up shortly from the Gutfeld Show. And it does stand up all around the country, one of the hottest around. We're following a bunch of stories, and we're going to stay all over them because a lot of things are developing in real time. We're also getting more information on Venezuela, as well as what's happening over some of the unrest in Iran. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
As you've seen today, two more ships were seized. We are in the midst right now and, in fact, about to execute on a deal to take all the oil. They have oil that is stuck in Venezuela. They can't move it because of our quarantine and because it's sanctioned. We are going to take between 30 and 50 million barrels of oil.
Okay, there we go. Marco Rubio weighing in. Trump's boldness is the best way to lead the world to peace and prosperity. Just look at his recent actions. A massive military muscle on display as they ignore a Russian warning not to take a tanker. They took the tanker. They claim as theirs. We said, no, it's ours. Signing on to sanctions for Russia's actions in Ukraine next week and forging ahead on Greenland. A hawking Iran all over the place. Civil unrest has ensued, and things aren't settling down in our chief nemesis of the Middle East. That, to me, is pretty impressive.
Number two.
The president's about to make some really big announcements, and what we're going to do is we want to preserve the wealth that a lot of people have accrued in their homes while also making it possible for young people to afford their first home.
And one of the things they're doing, well, there's a lot of things that they're doing. That's the Trump team making major moves. And I'll get into specifics on housing and the economy. The market didn't like it yesterday. They like it today. We'll talk about it.
Number one.
Motorist who federal officials said tried to run down an immigration agent in Minneapolis is dead tonight. She was shot by the ICE agent. The FBI and state law enforcement are investigating. Homeland Security Director Kristi Noem calls it an act of domestic terrorism and says the driver tried to kill the agent. The mayor of Minneapolis says that is, quote, garbage. Minnesota's governor says the tragedy was, quote, totally predictable and totally avoidable.
Incredible. Minneapolis continues to be a national embarrassment of a city. First, we have more facts about the massive fraud under Governor Waltz's watch. And now the harassing of ICE agents results in the death of a 37-year-old woman. And their leadership couldn't be more embarrassing. Everyone's on the left is hailing that this idiot mayor inflames things, makes it worse after the unfortunate incident that happened, really because ICE agents have been under attack everywhere. I think attacks on ICE agents are up 1,500%. They tried to kill him in Dallas. They ended up killing illegal immigrants that were being detained in Dallas. Remember all the hits that were taking on him and how the lawmakers, Democratic lawmakers, have been targeting them. You want an example of a lawmaker targeting ICE agents, setting the ground and setting the framework for this unrest? I mean, think about who's called them Gestapo. Tim Walz at a commencement address. Here he is yesterday saying he wants things to calm down. Cut 11.
I've issued a warning order to prepare the Minnesota National Guard. We have soldiers in training and prepared to be deployed if necessary. I remind you, a warning order is a heads up for folks. And these National Guard troops are our National Guard troops. They're teachers in your community. They're business owners. They're construction professionals. They are Minnesotans.
Really?
Minnesota will not.
Because they're Minnesotans. Are they the same Minnesotans when the National Guard is asked to call out in Chicago and in Minneapolis and in New York and in Los Angeles who are vilified? Yes, it's the same National Guard. You can call them out as a state leader, but ultimately they answer to the federal government. That's one way to phrase it. But then you have Governor Waltz saying everyone to calm down, but then says stuff like this. Cut 12.
We have someone dead in their car. For no reason whatsoever. I don't want to be right about this, but I said if they do this, they're going to create a chaotic situation where someone innocent's going to get killed. And they did it. And now we hear more political rhetoric. Enough. Enough is enough. And so to Minnesotans, don't take the bait. Do not take the bait. Do not allow them to deploy federal troops into here. Do not allow them to invoke the Insurrection Act.
Yeah, Governor Waltz, he's again saying how wrong he is, how this person was killed unnecessarily. Look, I wish he was alive. But you don't pull away from cops when they tell you to pull over. You don't drive into a cop on any level, state, local, sheriff, crossing guard, the mall cop, ICE. Well, of course, Governor Walz, you are guilty of all this. Cut 13.
Donald Trump's modern-day Gestapo is scooping folks up off the streets. They're in unmarked vans, wearing masks, being shipped off to foreign torture dungeons.
I mean, where does this guy come up with this? These people want inspiration on their graduation, and he's giving a speech because he thinks he's going to run for a third term, and he thinks he's going to run for president. That's what embarrassment this guy is. But it was calm Kristi Noem who came out there and said this ICE agent was dragged once before, and he was about to be hit again, shot through the windshield, killed the driver who was going to get out of control. So sadly, she's a mother of a seven-year-old or a six-year-old, and had a spouse, a same-sex spouse, even though he was married to a man where they had the kid. But now she's living there with her, and now she has lost her life, which is a tragedy. But do you know anybody in your life that when asked to roll down your window or pull over would just drive away? I mean, that's what they did, especially in this environment where they're trying to hem in and barricade in these ICE agents and maybe take their life or certainly rattle them if they're not doxing them. But that, of course, is every Democrat is saying this is murder without even knowing it. This is murder. Emily Heller was a witness to the whole thing. She was on CNN. Listen to what she said. Cut 17.
There was an ICE convoy that seemed to be stuck, and then there was a protester who was blocking traffic, so they couldn't progress. She was totally peaceful, and ICE, it seemed, completely unorganized. They didn't really know what they were doing. They were screaming at her to move, move, move. And then they approached her vehicle aggressively and tried to open her door. And then that's when she got spooked and she reversed her vehicle to turn her wheels to try to escape. And that's when an ICE agent stepped in front of her vehicle and said, stop. And then, I mean, she was already moving, and then point blank shot her through her windshield in the face.
All right, that's the most sympathetic eyewitness ever. But basically, you hear what she said in the beginning? They're in pursuit, and you look to block them in. What kind of person would block in law enforcement agents who are there to take illegal immigrant criminals off the street? People that just don't get it, they don't understand it, have been radicalized by terrible leaders, whether it's the governor of California, the governor of Illinois, the mayor of Chicago, the mayor of Illinois, or the mayor of New York City, who immediately put out that this is murder. Mayor of New York City. I mean, why should we be thinking anything else? And condemn President Trump for Venezuela like we care about his foreign policy. I love what Vance put out. He said, I want every ICE officer to know that their president, their vice president, the entire administration stands behind them. To the radicals assaulting them, doxing them, threatening them, congratulations. We're going to work even harder to enforce the law. Here's Tom Homan. Playing it smart, I think. Cut four.
The investigation just started.
Just started. You say you can't comment on the video, which many Americans are seeing and reacting to.
I'm not going to make a judgment call on one video when there's 100 videos out there. I wasn't on the scene. I'm not an officer that may have body cam video. It'd be unprofessional to comment on what I think happened in that situation. Let the investigation play out. And hold people accountable based on the investigation.
Yeah, hold people accountable. That was responsible. A little bit later, he tweeted out that he's seen enough and he knows, put something on Twitter. Here it is. The incident in Minnesota today is yet another tragic example of the result of the hateful rhetoric and violent attacks against the men and women of ICE and Border Patrol. They're brave women. Men and women are forced to conduct law enforcement operations in heightened threat environments every day. Like all Americans, our officers have a right to self-defense. 100% true. But not if you want to make gains out of it, make political gains out of it, or distract from a massive fraud investigation, which should embarrass the entire city, state, and the individual. But they want to change the subject big time. But that was happening yesterday, the investigation, which is on hyperspeed and will not slow down. Not here anyway. Here's a little of what we learned. Cut 19.
The Tim Walz administration has utterly failed to protect Minnesota taxpayers and vulnerable citizens, ignoring years of credible reports and retaliating against those who spoke up, often by claiming they were racist or Islamophobic. Tim Walz and the Democrats have repeatedly protected their political base at the expense of all Minnesotans.
When do you think Governor Walz knew about this fraud?
From the very beginning.
Do you have any doubt that Governor Tim Walz knew about this fraud as it was occurring?
He absolutely knew that it was occurring.
Yeah, and that was Emmer, who's a guy here who might run for that Senate seat if Klobuchar decides to run for governor now. Here's Walter Hudson. He played a key role in all this, and he was very good yesterday. Walter Hudson, Marion Rarick, Kristen Robbins, who's running for the governor spot and the Republican ticket, and the Democratic witness was a guy named Brendan Belew. Here's Walter Hudson, Cut 21.
Indeed, it's not just a theory. We have the record of the recording of Keith Ellison meeting with defendants and defeating our future case, where it was very explicit that the motivation for keeping scrutiny off them was based on perceived racism.
Yes. And by the way, Walter Hudson is black. So you want to, you're going to have the Somali community. What are you, a racist? No, I'm not a racist. Well, I'm going to say you're a racist because it seems like you're only questioning black people. Well, it turns out 80 people have been arrested. I think 72 have been Somali. So that's called following legitimate leads. So I thought Brandon Gill was fantastic, congressman from Texas. Let's listen.
Does large-scale Somali immigration make Minnesota stronger or weaker?
Certainly stronger.
Certainly stronger. Do you know what percentage of Somali-headed households in Minnesota are on food stamps?
No.
54%. Do you know what that number is for native Minnesota-headed households?
Well, to be clear, a majority of the...
It's 7%. There's a big difference between 54% and 7%, is there not?
And he went on to talk about how many are still on food stamps and only 50% can speak English who have been here more than 10 years. You're not assimilating. You're just taking advantage of us. I mean, what person who would like to leave that climate in Somalia, Africa, and come to the coldest state in the country, Minnesota? How do you even, what's the attraction? Well, coming to America, Brian, I got it. Well, it doesn't seem like you got it. Elon Omar hardly seems happy to be an American. Do you detect any happiness? Zero happiness from her. And yesterday was just a missed opportunity to get to the bottom of it. If I'm running for president and I'm a Democrat, I'm all over this fraud because people don't like it. Nobody likes it. You don't be like, well, that fake autistic, when all those parents made believe their kids were autistic in order to get the cash, that's okay. You know that Feeding the Future and that restaurant wrote up that it served millions of meals when they only have 30 tables and barely sold 200 meals? Don't worry. The food didn't go to the right people, but don't worry about it. You know those autistic kids who found out there were no slots for them in the autistic schools in front of the social services and they can't be mainstreamed? Well, you know why? Because people made up that their kids had insurance so you could take the money that was set aside for their schooling. How do you feel about that? Don't worry about it. So why should autistic kids have services? Is that what you think? That's what I would think. If I'm a Democrat, I go, look, it's embarrassing. That minute, Minneapolis mayor was embarrassing in 2020, even more embarrassing now. And that Governor Walz is just terrible. You know, I hate to turn on my own party, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to get to the bottom of fraud. Then I'm going to have credibility when I go to crack down in Republican states. They're going to say, well, you know, he did the same thing in our state. That's called emerging. And I think Ro Khanna is not going to get the nomination. But the fact that he wants to work with Republicans to get to the bottom of fraud in California, not only maybe it neutralizes Gavin Newsom, puts him on his heels, but it also gives credibility to him. Like it or not, I don't really care about your objective. If it helps the country, I'm fine with that. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the economy because Adam Hunter doesn't want to talk about that. There's some things the administration's doing that I find really encouraging and I think will work. You'll find out about it when we come back.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The big thing we did achieve is we cut the trade deficit by over 60% in the president's first year in office. That's amazing. What that means is more jobs coming to the United States, more investment coming to the United States of America. I want to build on that. You know, we talk about this $18 trillion of new investment that's coming to the United States. I want to build as many factories as possible, give as many Americans high-paying jobs as possible, and make as much of our own stuff. And I think while we do that, we've got to tackle the housing issue for a lot of young Americans. They feel like they're priced out of the housing market.
And a couple of things. I love the fact that they're cracking down on BlackRock and these other major investment companies that just buy up housing. They fix it up, make them working class housing, maybe first time buyers, and they make you renters. So they'll fix it up with a massive amount of money, take over entire neighborhoods, and then they'll rent the house to you. You're never going to buy it. It's not like you can eventually, you know, you pay off this house, you buy it from the Johnson family. No. So the president's going to have made a move yesterday to, and he's going to do an executive order to stop that. And the market didn't like that, dropped a few hundred points, but so what? I don't want these corporations buying houses. Do you? I'm all for the free market, but not if it boxes people out from living in their own home and things that are detrimental to the American public. Give you an opportunity to be successful. If it limits opportunity for other people, that's where you can get involved, and the president's involved. He's also going to announce next week he's going to give people access to their 401k if it's for buying a house. And I know he floated holding on to your interest rate. This would be huge. If he could find a way for banks to sign off on this, if you have a 4% mortgage and you want to move, but I'm not going to move because the best I can get is a 6% mortgage, so you're not going to move. What if you can transport that 4% to your next house? Now I might move. And maybe that'll help the banks who aren't getting many mortgages out there because people aren't moving. There were about 4 million homes shy. They're also going to allow you to get into your 529, your college fund, and help you pay off your loan without a penalty. Not pay off your loan, to get a house, to pay off a mortgage. So if you can give access to your own money early, I think that is a great idea. These are some of the innovative things. About the corporations, guess who likes this? Senator Elizabeth Warren, cut 27.
We could work with President Trump on this if he were serious about it. But if he were serious about it, we would already have the road to housing passed. It passed unanimously through the United States Senate. When's the last time anyone can say that? And it is a bill that builds out supply of housing in 40 different ways. And yet Donald Trump can't stir himself to get the House Republicans to sign on board. So it's pretty hard to believe that Donald Trump is really serious about lowering the cost of housing.
Well, he is. And what's going to be the major focus, I just told you three different ways, because they don't want to sign up the 40 ways Elizabeth Warren wants. And I don't know the details of that bill. But on the surface, you can get some bipartisan buy-in on that. So the president, what he wants to do is get things done. So he shouldn't worry about people not giving him credit or the Republicans credit for doing it if the Democrats are a part of it. Because he just could say, I worked across the aisle. That's what Joe Biden was able to say when he got about six Republicans to sign off on the infrastructure bill. I mean, I think you can get some people there that I don't love the idea. Do you love the idea of corporations coming in and just buying your neighbor's house and then the next block and the next block and the next block, knowing that they're just going to rent it to you? They're going to rent it to people. But do you think it makes neighborhoods better when someone's renting all the time? It's not theirs. There's no way they're going to take care of it as well. So I love that the president's doing that. I think he's going to do a lot of these things around the edges, and the big picture is a big, beautiful bill. And overall, he's making things more amenable to people who want to invest, want to grow, want to take risks. When we come back, I'm going to take a risk and bring in comedian Adam Hunter, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Have I been perfect in this? God dang no. I wasn't perfect as a teacher. I wasn't perfect as a coach. I wasn't perfect as a soldier, but I was pretty damn good at all those things. Game's over for him now. It was all me. I was the bad guy or whatever. Well, put up or shut up now and tell us what you're going to do to make this state better. Answer these tough questions. Quit hiding behind this and expect for the next 11 months, for me to ride you like you've never been ridden.
Right. And that, of course, is the worst governor in the country Governor Tim Walz, who the next day would be caught in a scandal, making everything worse when, I shouldn't say scandal, a controversial incident when a 37-year-old was shot dead by ICE agents, who he's been spending all of his time vilifying. What he was referring to there was the fact is the corruption allegations, which are all but proven, 80 people have been convicted, cost the federal government billions of dollars in order to fund all his social programs that were being ripped off, mostly by the Somali community. And he says, well, Donald Trump wants to come after me. And some of his phraseology I know stands out because Adam Hunter's here, outstanding comedian, writer for Gutfeld. Tonight will be on Gutfeld playing himself. Adam, we thought that if we just gave you a little about Governor Tim Walz, things would come into your mind.
I mean, Tim Walz, I'm happy he actually stepped down. I mean, he had 9 billion reasons to.
Yes. You know? It could get bigger.
Yeah. And then when he did, they actually lowered the flag on pirate ships in Somalia. I don't know if you know this. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand, like, Minnesota, between Walz and Omar and Jacob. Like, what happened to the good old days when they had real honest people like Jesse the Body Ventura?
Yeah.
And Stuart Smiley, you're at, like, or that was, it's crazy what's going on in Minnesota.
Don't they have standards? I mean, Jesse Ventura is out of his mind. I mean, and by the way, he used to just hide. They say he used to just hide in his basement.
But he's looking good compared to these guys.
Oh yeah, I know.
He's JFK. I mean, it's like, I mean, it is unbelievable. I mean, I think when Tim Walz dropped out, they actually had tampons that have string.
Well,
that was a big thing.
It's an interesting tribute.
Yeah,
but he hasn't really stepped down. We shouldn't mislead the audience, Adam. He's just saying he's not running for re-election. I think he eventually is going to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, he only has what,
a year
left. I was actually, as a comic, I was kind of hoping he would stay because he was going to run against Mike Lindell.
Yes.
So it was going to be like my pillow versus my tampons,
right?
Which would be great. And then he said then Ilhan Omar. It might have been him versus Omar, which would be insane versus incest.
Right.
So it was like, it was all kinds of great things for comedy. But yeah, I don't know. I think Tim Walz is, it's crazy because when he said he wasn't running, Gavin Newsom said, I wrote it down. He said, he's a man of character, period. But what he meant to say was he's a man of character on his period.
Right. He came off wrong.
There was a couple typos there. But yeah, I don't understand. It all starts from the top. You know, if like the top is corrupt, everything else falls and you have guys. I mean, how do you not see? Why is it easier to get a dictator out of Venezuela than it is to find one kid in a Somalian daycare center?
I know. And by the way, the famously was misspelled the quality leering center.
Yeah, right. Because it should have been a quality stealing center.
Right.
They were actually kind of right. Stealing.
So it was really wrong.
Yeah, it was wrong twice.
So Adam, on top of that, yesterday they announced they're closing. Do you have any idea why?
Oh, the daycare center?
It's closing. Might be on your list for Gutfeld tonight.
They didn't have one parent complain. you would think that, like, perfect attendance, which was zero. Yeah, that's the thing. And then Hilton wouldn't let ICE agents stay at the Hilton.
Yeah.
But I'm like, well, there's all kinds of vacancies at the daycare center. You could have just put all those people there.
Yes.
You just got to figure it out.
And healthcare, too. Adam, the other thing is comedy is kind of under. Well, I think it's fascinating, actually. A lot of stories, even going to be on the Sunday show this week, about what's happening in comedy. And Conan O'Brien, who leans left, we know that, more than leans, he's out there. But when it comes to comedy, he does not want any part of the anti-Trump stuff. Listen to what he said.
Some comics go the route of, I'm going to just say F Trump all the time, or that's their comedy. And I think, well, now a little bit you're being co-opted because you're so angry. You've been lulled, it's like a siren leading you into the rocks. You've been lulled into just saying F Trump, F Trump, F Trump, screw this guy. And I think you've now put down your best weapon, which is being funny, and you've exchanged it for anger.
Is he 100% right?
He is right. I mean, I had an acting teacher one time that would always say, like, frustration is funny, but anger isn't. And I think that's it. When someone's frustrated, it's funny. You're like, you're going to laugh at somebody kind of, you know, flabbergasted. But when they're angry, you're just like, ugh, you know, and I have to remember that sometimes also, like on stage and you know, whether or not, because being, no one wants to be yelled at, no one wants to be lectured, but when, but at the same time, you know, like Lewis Black was always like a frustrated comedian. Yeah. That was funny. I mean, you know, Rodney Dangerfield, Don Rickles, these are like frustrated people that were, even Seinfeld, you know, was frustrated. But when people are just screaming at you, unless you're Sam Kinison, you really can't pull it off. So,
but he's talking about all the late night guys, and he used to do that. Now, knowing that, you know, he's way out there to the left on his beliefs, and who cares? I don't, because he doesn't take it to his job. Why is that so hard?
Well, the thing about like why Gutfeld is, I mean, you think about like Gutfeld has probably a third, a fourth, like a tenth of the writers and budget, probably a hundredth of the budget of Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Stephen Colbert, and we win every night. Like they win every night by like, it's not even close. And it's a lot of times it's like these rules all of a sudden started becoming a comedy. I don't know who made the rules, but they're like, you can't punch down, right? And they go, which means like you can't make fun of people who are, let's say, doing worse than you. First of all, who decided someone's down? Yeah. Like, I don't think people that want to be known as, oh, I'm down, you can't make fun of me. I've done comedy for 25 years, and it's always the person in the room that, like, people, no one wants to not be included. So Greg makes fun of everybody. He goes, everyone's fair game. Everyone. And the thing about, like, what Colbert and them is, they're like, oh, well, you can't make fun of minorities, and you can't make fun of fat people, and you can't make fun of disabilities, you can't, people with disabilities, you can't make fun of this, you can't make fun of that, you can't, you, poor people, they had all these rules where the only person you could make fun of is Donald Trump. Literally one person.
One person left.
So now you have a 10-minute monologue every single night about the same person, and eventually people are like, okay, either we get it, or it's just, this is just boring to me. And I think that's what Conan is saying is like, you don't want to like all of a sudden take away all your targets, which everyone should be a target, every single person.
And it just relaxes people. You go after Walls and you go after Trump, game on.
Yeah.
That's what Leno did.
100%. And that's why Leno was so much better. It's like these people, they started making all these rules. And the thing is, they started speaking for other people. They're like, oh, you can't make fun of black people. And black people are like, wait, what? It was not the black people saying you can't make fun of black people. It was like the super liberal left. And you know, I learned as a comic, you could never be, because I'm a pretty liberal guy. Like, I'm a liberal person. I really don't care what you do. You know, I'm not less, my politics are, I wouldn't say I'm a leftist, but I'm liberal as far as like, you want to go be gay, you want to do this, you want to be trans, do whatever you want. Not if you're a child, but if you're 18 and over, do whatever you want.
Right.
But you can't be liberal enough. It just keeps going and going. That left spectrum is like, it's like miles away.
So do you think it ends when Trump ends?
Do you think
like Jimmy Kimmel will go after?
No, because it didn't start with Trump. It started like before Trump. I think these things all go in cycles, and I think somebody kind of breaks it. Like in the 80s, things became kind of PC, and then Dice Clay just was like the most offensive human being. And then there was a counteract to that. You know, I don't know. I don't think it ends with Trump, but, I think everyone should be fair game. There are plenty of times I don't like someone's joke. Like it's not offensive to me, but I'm just like, ugh. But I don't try to get the person fired, and I don't care. I just look away. I go, this is the next joke.
Right. You know? So Zoran Mamdani is mayor of New York City, and in a week, it's been pretty clear he's going to give you a lot of ammunition.
Oh, yeah.
Including making World Cup tickets. Of course, he's got nothing else to do. Well, affordable, listen.
You know, I had a New Yorker the other day come up to me and ask me if there was any way I could help him get World Cup tickets, because he was saying that the cost that he saw for a game was $600, right? This is increasingly out of reach. We have made what used to be a working class game into a luxury experience. And there are too many for whom it doesn't matter where the World Cup is being played in the world, they know where they're going to watch it. It's TV. And we want to ensure that there are more experiences available to each and every New Yorker.
So he's going to make world. Was he going to buy the tickets and then resell them for less money?
I mean, look, maybe he wants everyone to get a good night's sleep.
Right.
But no, look, everyone always says, and especially with my European friends, you got to go to a soccer game. You got to go to. So I think this is good if he makes it more affordable. But I think there's on the list of things he has to do, this should be so down there. I mean, this should not even, like, this is not what you should be talking about. You know, like, if you want to make universal child care free for New York, great. That's actually, I think, actually the one of the things I actually like. Work on that. You know, let's work on that, because right now you said you were going to make transportation free, and within a week, subway prices went up.
Right.
Like,
yeah, it went up over the weekend.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, what is this? To get people on the bus? Like, so I don't think anything he says that he's going to do, he's going to be able to do, and I think that's only going to make people more cynical. You know, it's like. He's the guy that promises all this stuff, and I don't think he's going to deliver any of it.
I hear you. Who's on your panel tonight?
It's me, Michelle Tafoya, who I think is running for.
Is she going to announce this?
I don't know. It was in the New York Post like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that she was thinking about.
Yeah. She's already learning Somali.
Oh, she's Minnesota.
Yeah.
Oh,
Minnesota.
Wow.
And then of course Tyrus and Kat and Greg and super excited about that.
So I want to play some of the fireworks that took place yesterday. So you know that the Oversight Committee, their goal is to find out about the corruption in Minnesota, right? So, as usual, Democrats get a chance to talk. They are on the panel. They just have one less person. So I want to hear what they decide to focus on. Would it be on the health care fraud? Would it be on the child care fraud? Or will they just decide to do something else? I want you to hear different Democrats get off the topic. First off, here's Summer Lee. Decides to go after the chairman. Cut 24.
Trump has attacked the oversight mechanisms within the federal government. He illegally fires 17 inspectors general and other key personnel. He goes after whistleblowers and he tries to roll back their protections. He routinely ignores the rampant corruption within his own administration.
Ms. Lee, the IGs are hired to identify fraud. They haven't identified fraud. The IGs have failed. But anyway.
You all have failed.
No,
you all continue
you
to
all
fail.
Have
We've
failed.
Done nothing. You've had the gavel, Mr. Comer. We barely do hearings on anything that actually
failed.
Affects
you
change.
Have you want
you
to
have
more
power
money,
here,
more money,
and
more
yet
money.
You don't do anything.
You think he's there helping the country?
No. I mean, it's $9 billion of missing.
Right.
Taxpayer money's missing. Trump did this. Trump did that. Okay, let's talk about the $9 billion that are missing. It's yeah. right. It was... $9 billion.
It was astounding.
All these people are paying taxes. Half their checks are coming out of half the money that they earn all day long is going to government. But $9 billion is missing. And, well, Trump did this and Trump did that.
It gets worse. Cut 25.
Raise your hand if you oppose the pardon of George Santos.
Not playing this game.
It's not a game. It's real life. That means that you support this pardon of this corporation that frauded folks to the tune of $100 million.
Refusal to participate is not an expression.
Yesterday, reclaiming my time.
You know
the rules of committee?
One way or the other.
Do you know the rules of committee? This is my time.
I know that I am here as a member of the public.
Reclaiming my time. You are not,
you,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, I can't.
Yeah.
It's making you stress.
Somebody's married to her. Somebody has to listen to this.
I don't know that for sure. Hey, Pete, could you look that up? Did anyone marry her?
What does George Santos have to do with this?
I don't know.
Like, George Santos has been pardoned. That's over.
And he's now on the panel.
He's
on Gutfeld sometimes.
Yeah, he's on Gutfeld. I mean, George Santos is George Santos. And he had a party, I guess, a Halloween party that everyone seemed to went to that Lauren Boebert couldn't get into. Or she got in, but her friends couldn't get into the party or something.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't.
Can you imagine... he has a party that people want to go to. He just got out of prison.
Yeah.
He admitted he defrauded everybody.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not a fan of George Santos and what he did because he was stealing from charities and allegedly. And when you're stealing from kids' charities, it's like, that's a different
kind of... I don't think allegedly. That's why he went to jail.
That's a different kind of low. So, you know, as charming as he is, but what does this have to do with the $9 billion?
Yes.
Like, that is so frustrating. And it's all the people like on a... Anything that happens on Facebook, and it's both ways. I mean, something happens now when you're like, and then people on the right, well, Biden did this. Okay, but now, well, Trump did this. Well, can we just focus on what we have to do? This is like when I fight with my wife and she starts bringing up stuff from 5 years ago. And, well, you missed my birthday or you weren't there on Valentine's Day. Okay, but what does this have to do with the dog sitting on the floor right now, you know, or pooping? Sorry if I.
Yeah, that would have been better. We're going to find out. I'm going to tell you what on Adam Hunter's shirt when we get back. He's going to explain it. Also, she's been married since 2014. So you're right. Factually correct.
Yeah, somebody has to deal with that.
Back in a moment.
Illuminating. Intriguing. Inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
There is alcohol on these dietary guidelines, but the implication is don't have it for breakfast. Right, this should be something done small amount with hopefully some kind of an event that might have alcohol at it.
So this is kind of unique to have one of our members of the MAHA movement of Health and Human Services, Dr. Oz, say, look, I'm giving you a food pyramid and I'm telling you, you can have some drinks. Just keep it moderate because sometimes you need it for a social setting. Adam Hunter has no idea what it's like to drink in a social setting because no one hangs out with him.
100%.
Right.
None. Adam,
so,
none.
So that yesterday, big announcement. This is normally 100 pages. They gave him 10 pages. Food pyramid, they said, was just exactly upside down.
Well, it was funny that like RFK Jr. was saying like, oh, you know, the healthy fat and the protein, because you know his diet consists of like bear and whale and like, you know, olive wing or, you know, ostrich wing and all kinds. So that was. But yeah, I mean, they say a glass of wine isn't bad for you a couple of days a week. That's what they say, like one glass of wine.
Well, they think two drinks a day. Do you think?
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not a big drinker. I almost never drink because I always tell myself at night I'm going to do something productive. I'm going to write the next best joke. And I know if I start drinking, there's no way of that happening.
But do you enjoy drinking?
Not really.
See, that's the key.
Yeah, not really.
But like, were you hanging out with the guys? Like, have a drink?
No. No, I got sent to a really like a reform boarding school for troubled kids. When I was
really
13 years old. For 5 years, I was there in Maine.
5 years?
5 years. I was the only eighth grader in the whole school. and then they, it was like all these kids. It was great. It was called the Hyde School. And I highly recommend it, but it was one of those schools where like you couldn't lie, steal, cheat, drink, have sex. And then all the families that like alcoholics were there, a lot of alcoholic. And then I think be in seminars all day long and talk about my problems. And I would see the after effects of alcoholism. And it's kind of scared me.
You got scared straight.
Yeah.
Permanently.
100%.
But they say it's good for a social setting. But I heard one of these doctors, one of these psychologists said, the one thing that's keeping kids out of bars is like they could just go online. And they said the one thing you miss is going to a bar, playing darts, whatever it is, and meeting other people, being in unscripted settings.
You know what? Like when I do comedy on cruise ships, you would go to the club afterwards, yeah. Like the nightclub. The women are on a dance floor and they're twerking and they're getting down and they're on the, and the guys are hiding in the corner.
Yes.
And it's just people have, they're on their phone scrolling.
Because they don't want to take that risk of saying, hey, might you like me? But everyone likes Adam Hunter. We'll see you tonight.
Thank you.